This is the Citizen of Heaven podcast number 235, Terror. I'm Hal Hammonds, Citizen of Heaven, your embedded correspondent in Satan's world. Thanks for listening, sharing, and subscribing. We begin Monster Month on the podcast with a conversation about the fears that Satan's world brings out in us, the sort of treatment we can expect from Satan and from God along the way, and how we can find faith to survive and thrive. My guests are the co-hosts of the Biblically Speaking podcast, Jared Bowman and Brian Haynes. Make sure you check them out. And make sure you check out the Biblically Speaking YouTube channel as well. It's a scary world out there, no doubt about it. Our enemy is described as a lion and as a dragon. He has wolves disguised and working as his agents among the people of God. Surely any reasonable person in this situation would be terrified. And yet the most commonly repeated command in the Bible is, fear not. What can Christians do on a practical level to live fearlessly?
You know, it's interesting. As a Christian, you turn on the news, and what do you hear? You hear, well, you know, the climate is going to destroy the earth. The economy is about to explode. We're about to go to war. It seems like every day I hear something new to be afraid of, something new to get worried about, and something I haven't even thought about being worried about before worrying me. And so I'm excited to talk about these things because this is a real struggle for me sometimes, you know, to have that mindset that says, hey, I don't worry about those kinds of things. I know what the fate of the world is, and I understand what God's going to be doing for me, and I have a trust there, but that sure is something I need to work on.
The command, don't be afraid. Think about how many places that resonates. I mean, Jesus says it, right? Peter says it. Paul deals with it. You've got entire Psalms that are about this. And it all seems to boil down to what's your proximity to God, that the aspect of fear that we have in the world, even things that are like the fear of death. I mean, you and I, Hal, were talking just a few moments ago about a preacher that we know that passed away way too young by this world's calendar. This world has a real fear of death, but the closer you are to God, the closer you are to Jesus, the more that fear sort of abates. I almost look at, my son thinks it's a sin to watch the news because I hate the news so much. He came home from his grandparents' house, true story. He came home from his grandparents' house one time and he was really sullen. I said, Will, what's wrong? He goes, Dad, I'm worried about Grandmommy and Granddaddy. And I said, why? He says, they watch the news. And it was, and it's because and Hal, you and I have talked about this, and Brian and I talked about this before, and anybody that's listened to any of my podcasts knows this. Years ago, I turned off the news and talk radio because it made me angry. But it's almost like the further I get away from them, the more I realize how the devil uses those things to make us fearful, to get us fixated and concentrating on this world, to make himself seem more powerful in that role of the lion or the dragon than he really is.
You know, one thing to think about is that you can kind of see whenever a Christian allows fear to be the problem in their life. They begin to, let's say it's politics, they begin to fixate on political solutions to problems that actually have spiritual solutions. They begin to say, you know what, we need this to happen, and I need to be a person who's pushing for this change to occur. And suddenly they lose sight of who's in charge and they begin to pursue solutions that really are ineffective. Our adversary would love it if we all decided that the best thing that can happen is that we can all get involved in local things that aren't spiritual, you know, whether they're political or community oriented, and that's the only solutions that we're pursuing. Our adversary would be thrilled. If we got afraid enough of politics or the environment or circumstances like that, that we lost sight of the true spiritual importance of things around us. If it ceased to be about souls being saved and our own salvation being chief among our importance in life, that if we could lose sight of that, fear would do that. If I got so afraid of an impending economical destruction that I hoarded all my wealth, so that I could be prepared for that.
Painting placards instead of evangelizing and sitting down with people
right,
in the Bible.
Yeah. Right, right. You know, and again, our adversary would be thrilled if I could believe that I could set aside and build big storehouses and trust him that wealth or that protection because of my fear of the things around me. He would be so very pleased to know that.
You know, what's interesting about what you just said, Brian, is that Jesus doesn't even refer to that as fear. He refers to that as covetousness in the parable. And very often one of the aspects of fear that you see is covetousness, because in the thing that we covet, we think we find security. You look at people who are out there right now and they are bemoaning the fact that, you know, they can't find a relationship. And we talk a lot about this on Man Up, that, you know, men are not pairing off into relationships the way that they used to because the women are more secularly minded. And then the women get to a certain age and then, well, the men aren't interested in me anymore. Well, because you've spent your whole life sowing your body to the world and the guys that you thought were worth it. Now you're looking for the guy that will accept you. And it's fear that eventually drives them to try to make that commitment that they were reluctant to make before, rather than seeking something that was holy that God wanted them to have to begin with. And it really is that the essence of covetousness is fear. I think sometimes we have this idea that covetousness is like the Scrooge McDuck thing where he's swimming through the money. You know, it's really not covetousness. Some of the most covetous people I've ever known were the poorest people that I've ever known. And that idea of, I don't have this, therefore I don't have security. Well, where's your security? Like Brian was just pointing out, where's your security supposed to come from? Fear is a way of undermining relationships. You know, when a husband or a wife suspects that the other is cheating on them, they begin to take very distinct steps out of fear. Oftentimes, you know, they'll begin to check messages. They'll begin to go through bank statements with a fine tooth comb rather than having a conversation about it. And maybe, you know, the conversation wouldn't have yielded anything, but fear ultimately undermines trust. In Mark 4, when Jesus tells the apostles, why were you so afraid? Meaning, I'm here on the boat. You see me do some things, guys, right? You see me do a few things. That why were you so afraid, you of little faith? It's not that fear was the problem itself, because they were in a scary situation. It's that it had obviously undermined the moorings of that relationship, because they said, don't you care that we're perishing? That's the point that fear had led them to. And I think that that's why the devil is so exploitive of our fear. When we're children, we're afraid of some very silly things. We're afraid of the dark. Well, maybe it's not that silly to be afraid of the dark, but you know, we're afraid of the dark. We're afraid of the monster under the bed. We're afraid of the thing on the television. And I can remember Will asking me, you know, Dad, why aren't you afraid of anything? Because he likes to try to jump scare and successfully jump scares his mom all the time, that he loves for her to be carrying a load of laundry and to hide around a corner and go, ooh, and then she'll throw the laundry in the air and it all rains down and she gets upset and he cackles and runs upstairs. And Brian, you can tell by Brian's reaction. I don't know if Hal's releasing these on video yet or not, but Brian knows that Will does this. In fact, he's probably jump scared you a time or two.
He's tried.
Because, Dad, why can't I scare you that way? And I tell him, because the things that make me afraid are not the things that jump out and get me. They're the things that I don't prepare for. And I think sometimes the devil wants us to be looking for the things that could jump out and get us, rather than thinking about our relationship with God and eternity and the fact that God is that stabilizing influence in our life.
Well, that's what Jesus says about himself, right? How he characterizes himself in John 14:30. He says, the devil does not have anything in me. Mm-hmm. He's able to sleep in the bottom of the boat because nothing is going to harm him in the bottom of the boat. And he knows that at his core. And nothing's going to happen that's going to change that. Well, we are not that secure in our faith. The devil does have something in us. Mm-hmm. And because we are not completely focused on spiritual things, things that cannot be taken from us unless we allow them to be taken, there is no harm that can come to us in Jesus, in theory. But because we are weak, because we are fearful, we give in to the whole short-term solution sort of thing. And our solution to carnal problems in the flesh, is always building bigger barns. You're both kind of touching on the idea of the rich farmer in Luke chapter 12. A lot of times people think of that as planning for the future. I call that planning for the present. I don't want to worry about the future. I don't want to worry about what's going to happen or blah, blah, blah. And in the short term, in the ideal, that looks like a reasonable approach. But in reality, there are a couple of major problems with that. Jesus points one of them out in the Sermon on the Mount about how thieves break through and steal and rust corrodes, etc. Mm-hmm. He points out another one in this parable, how under the best of circumstances, you're going to die. And then what's going to happen? You cannot build a barn big enough to secure your future if all you're concerned about is this life.
Yeah.
If you are putting treasures in heaven, if that's where your real storehouse is, if that's where you're building your bigger barns, that makes some sense spiritually, but it requires faith to live that way. Mm-hmm. And it requires a more accurate vision of God's plan for us. And we are not always up to that challenge, I think. And that's where the fear takes over.
Well, think about the seven statements of John. I mean, the I am statements, but the end of the book of John in chapter 20, before you get to 21, the statements that these things are written so that you may believe. Well, what are you supposed to believe? Well, that Jesus is the bread of life, that Jesus is the light of the world, that Jesus is the door, the good shepherd, the resurrection and the life, the way, the truth and the life, the vine. All of those things indicate that he's the solution to some kind of problem that we might be fearful of. And ultimately, John is not just believing that Jesus exists. It's not just trying to inspire us to believe that Jesus existed and walked in on this world. It's and that he exists and gives life, and that we have life through his name. And that's really what Satan is trying to undermine.
I think, too, you guys used that analogy of Jesus, or the story of Jesus in the boat and Jesus rebuking his disciples, you know, telling them they had little faith. Uh-huh. And you both kind of pointed out the idea that this is a terrific storm. I mean, it's not as though this is not something that doesn't strike us with fear. But, you know, sometimes there's a difference between fear and panic, panic that sets in that you say, hey, we're going to have to do something. That something's going to happen. Why was it they were not supposed to be afraid? Because Jesus was on the boat. If they believe that Jesus is the savior of the world, that he is, well, God in the flesh, that he is the most important thing in human history, if they believe even half of those things, they should say, well, God's not going to swamp the boat. This is not going to happen while he's on board. They should have had that confidence. Well, let's take that and let's make that an analogy of the kingdom. We're in the kingdom with Christ. And yet, how many times are we afraid that the storms that are going on in the world around us are going to swamp the kingdom, that the kingdom is going to be lost because of that? You know, I hear people say, oh, yeah, Islam, that's going to be the thing that takes, or secular humanism, that's going to wipe us out, or all the things people get afraid of. What's the greatest problem that happens? Well, what if somebody had said, this boat's going to go, I'm jumping overboard to swim to shore, which is definitely a you're going to die kind of moment. You're going to drown. But, you know, when we've seen times where storms have come up in the world, we do see people jump ship. We do see people say, hey, I think I can make it because this boat doesn't seem safe anymore and I'm going to go, and they're lost. I mean, you know, if you'll let me throw out the example that we saw in the last few years with COVID, the fears that brought up. It's not wrong to be afraid. We're going to be afraid. Things are going to happen that are frightening. Things are going to happen that give us concern. But our attitude is, number one, what do I know to be true? You know, if I'm in mm-hmm. the kingdom, if that's the boat I'm in, I know that the kingdom can't be sunk. I know that this is where my hope is to make it to shore. And, you know, number two, I have to say to myself that I cannot make choices based on fear. I have to make choices based on faith.
This is sadly ironic, but the thing that we often fear the most is going to, like Brian was using the analogy of secular humanism, just the way of the world is going to swamp the church. It's going to take our young people away. The more that we fear that, and the less that we focus our young people on God and showing them our trust in God in these situations, the more panicked we become about it, the more that becomes true. The more that we focus on this thing that we're fearful of, and the less we speak about Jesus and God and bringing them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord being the key to that, the less successful we are in maintaining them. And it's because the fear is what's speaking rather than the faith.
And I think we have a real problem distinguishing between being delivered from the storm and being delivered from death in the storm. Because it would seem in the moment that if Jesus cared about us, and that's the question, don't you care? that he wouldn't have let us be in the storm in the first place. Well, that makes a certain degree of sense, I suppose, but I'm not as wise as the Lord is, and I have to yield to his judgment, and there very well may be some method in the madness that I may or may not reconcile myself to at some point. I may live another 50 years and never understand why that storm came, never see any kind of purpose. I really get concerned when people get really obsessive when a child dies or they lose their job or whatever happens. There's got to be a reason. There's got to be a reason. Well, there probably is a reason, but there's no guarantee you're going to find that reason, that it's ever going to make sense to you. That's not the point. The point is, are you going to be able to trust in Jesus here and believe that he will see you through the storm rather than necessarily taking the storm away? And sometimes he will take the storm away, and it's entirely appropriate. Obviously, some storms more than others. It's entirely appropriate for you to pray that you be delivered from the anxiety and stress and pain and suffering that this life oftentimes comes. And maybe the Lord will answer that prayer in a positive way, and that's great. But it's far more important that we find ourselves driven into the arms of Jesus in these moments than we convince Jesus somehow, some way, to take the storm away from us. We don't want to get wet. We don't want to get inconvenienced. And I really get embarrassed for myself sometimes when I hear these stories, Bible stories and secular stories as well, of people who went through storms far greater than anything I've ever gone through. And Lord willing, stronger than anything I ever will go through. And they bore up, it would seem anyway, far better than I bear up under my circumstances. And it's really kind of embarrassing and shaming. I need to do better than that.
And that's one of the hardest things to get people to see in this day and age, that you, that there's a storm and somebody says, well, I must be doing something wrong. Well, no, it's not necessarily the case. Job wasn't doing anything wrong. That there's a storm, I must need to make some drastic change in my life. Well, no, that's not, I mean, if you're thinking about that and you see a drastic change you need to make, then obviously make that drastic change. But how, even in the best times, when we think, okay, I can connect the dots, that I can see God's providence in that, we're still just guessing. We're still just guessing at the end of the day, that we can see, well, maybe this is why God did this, because I can see this positive outcome on the other side of it. That's just a guess. You know, more glory to God, because you can see the positive outcome. But that may be a positive outcome, but it may not have been the reason. And in some cases, the reason is faith just gets tested, and it's good for it to be tested. And that's the only reason why it happens.
I think of Job and the fact that Job, the scriptures say in chapter 1, prayed every time his kids were together for their safety. And what I think is interesting about that is that it implies that Job knew that their death was a possibility, that something could happen to them. He wasn't ignorant, and he didn't believe that God would spare them, you know, just to spare them, that he saw that as a possibility. So he did everything he could, everything within his power, to prevent something bad happening to them. So, you know, when you think of what he was doing, he was offering sacrifices for them constantly. For the sake of their preservation. And then they're all lost to him. And he seems to be able to deal with that to some degree. And I think one of the important ideas is, here is Job, a man who I think was preparing himself, but at the same time, it isn't as though he lives with that as though it's a fear that strikes him whenever it happens. He's able to appreciate and understand what's going on with his life. Of course, you know, his big dilemma is he wants answers. We probably understand that. And I don't know how far to go with that thinking, but it's important for us to get that sense that even to the knowledge of thinking that, hey, I need to be prepared for everything that I can be prepared for. I need to be ready for any event in my life. That's really not going to be very successful. That's just not going to work. It doesn't work for Job. It doesn't, who's just as godly a man as there is. It's not going to work for us too, that there's going to be surprises. There's going to be moments where we get out in the ship and the storm hits and there was no way we could have been ready for it. We just have to trust God. And I have to believe that that's our adversary's hope, that sense of preparation dooms us to fear. And it doesn't have to.
And, you know, bring up Job, and my favorite Linus Van Pelt theology is from Job 5, verse 7, where Eliphaz says that man is born for trouble as sparks fly upward. Job's friends were wrong about a lot of things, but Eliphaz is right about that. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the world that you live in. You know, you are a piece of steel that you think is pretty functional, you know, pretty good. And it goes into the fire and gets heated up to the point where it's no longer strong. And then you take it out of the fire and think, okay, good, now we're getting somewhere. And then you start getting beaten on by a hammer. Eliphaz says, that's what life is. And I fear that my generation and subsequent generations hear that philosophy and say, no, I don't think so. And I certainly don't think it should be that way. And with a little bit of effort on my part and maybe a little help from God, it won't be that way. Life is good. Life is comfortable. Life is pleasant and free or virtually free of difficulties. And if it's not that, there is something terribly, terribly wrong. And the Bible story is very much the opposite. Life is a series of challenges. It's pain and suffering. I don't want to be just overly negative about this, but the idea of I'm hurting and therefore something is wrong, give me a pill, that is a very modern concept and one that is not necessarily conducive to this process that God is trying to work in us while we're in the flesh.
I mean, that refining that you're talking about there is, we used to have a term for that, and it was masculine. That was how you made a man, was you refined him. You put him in something that was difficult, you shaped him to that difficulty, and then you put him back in the fire again until he came out the man that he was supposed to be. And that was sort of the idea of training up your children, and the way that they should go is to work the curve out of them, if you will. And anymore, we want to be static. And I think the number one thing that scares most people is that I won't always be static. I won't always be comfortable. I won't always be in a situation where I am flush and happy and healthy and everybody's doing well. And when things happen, the reality is that that is life. Things are going to happen. You know, I'm mourning the death of somebody that passed away at 61 years old. That's relatively young for our day and age. Life just happens sometimes. And life prepared to meet God is always going to be a better preparation than life that is unprepared to meet God. And yet our world wants us focused on so many other things because the first thing it wants to tell us is that you wouldn't have these problems if there was a God.
Thank you for listening to the Citizen of Heaven podcast. Please rate, review, and share so others can access this content. I encourage you also to join the Heaven Citizens Facebook group. There you will find links to related materials, conversation starters, poll questions, and the occasional special announcement. Also, check out the Hal Hammons channel on YouTube for even more content. Until next time, be strong and courageous, fight the good fight of faith, and do all things in the name of the Lord Jesus. This is Hal Hammons, Citizen of Heaven, signing off.